Hello, and welcome to Introduction to Meteorology at the University of Hawaii at Manoa with Dr. Jennifer Griswold. Thank you for joining us. In today's lecture, we're going to talk about the heating of the Earth's atmosphere, the greenhouse effect, how radiation interacts with the atmosphere, clouds and the Earth's surface, and why we have seasons. In preparation for today's lecture, you should have read through the second half of Chapter 2 from the Aaron's text. Since we're going to be talking about radiation and how it interacts with different aspects of the Earth's system, we first need to talk about black bodies. By definition, a black body is a hypothetical object that absorbs all of the radiation that strikes it. It also emits radiation at a maximum rate for its given temperature. The Sun and the Earth can be considered black bodies. The Earth's radiative equilibrium temperature is about 255 Kelvin. This is equal to negative 18 degrees Celsius or 0 degrees Fahrenheit. A radiative equilibrium temperature is the temperature achieved when an object, behaving as a black body, is absorbing and emitting radiation at equal rates. So if we're 0 degrees Fahrenheit, why isn't this the average surface temperature of the Earth? Remember, our average temperature is about 59 degrees Fahrenheit. The answer is that the atmosphere isn't a black body, even if the Earth, the rocks, and the oceans are. This is because atmospheric gases are selective absorbers and absorb and emit infrared radiation. Atmospheric gases are the most effective absorbers of radiation and play the primary role in heating the atmosphere. We can talk about the impact of different gases. Water vapor, oxygen, and ozone absorb most of the energy in the atmosphere at a variety of wavelengths. These gases keep our surface temperature above the frigid 0 degrees Fahrenheit that we would experience if we were just a simple black body with no atmosphere. Carbon dioxide, or CO2, is important at long wavelengths, like the infrared. We can draw a figure to show at which wavelengths different gases absorb radiation. When a gas doesn't absorb radiation at a specific wavelength, it is allowed to travel through the atmosphere to the surface. These openings are called atmospheric windows. For example, the atmospheric window for infrared radiation is the wavelength range between 8 and 11 micrometers. And in this atmospheric window, there's little absorption of infrared radiation. We can look at individual gases and the wavelengths of radiation that they interact with, or we can combine all of them and see the total impact of gases on incoming solar radiation. When we do this, we see that there are two very large windows. First, the infrared window between 8 and 11 micrometers, and the second in the visible range between 400 and 700 nanometers, or 0.4 and 0.7 micrometers. This means that the atmosphere is nearly transparent for shortwave visible radiation, but absorbs strongly in the longwave radiation realm, except for that 8 to 11 micrometer range. So what does this mean for atmospheric temperature? The greenhouse effect is how we describe the additional warming due to the absorption of longwave infrared radiation by gases like CO2. The fact of the matter is, the atmosphere warms the planet due to the presence of water vapor, CO2, and other trace gases like methane that absorb that outgoing infrared radiation. This absorbed energy heats the air, causing our average temperature at the surface to be around 59 degrees Fahrenheit, or 33 degrees Celsius. Greenhouse gases are often made out to be villains in the global warming and climate change debate. You must realize, though, that greenhouse gases and the greenhouse gas effect are not the same thing as global warming. Without the greenhouse effect, the Earth would be uninhabitable and would be 0 degrees Fahrenheit, or our black body temperature. Last time I checked, we can't live on a world at 0 degrees Fahrenheit since we can't have liquid water at 0 degrees Fahrenheit, because water freezes at 32 degrees Fahrenheit. Thus, the greenhouse effect is an important mechanism keeping the Earth at a temperature that sustains life. Human activity is making the atmosphere more efficient at retaining longwave emissions from Earth, thus increasing the temperature further. Human activity is increasing the total amount of CO2 and other greenhouse gases in the atmosphere. You may be wondering what actually happens to incoming solar radiation. Besides absorption, there are other ways radiation can interact with the atmosphere and the surface of the Earth. It can be transmitted through the atmosphere, reflected by the surface gases or clouds, or scattered by particles and clouds in the atmosphere. It all depends on the wavelength of energy. First, we'll talk about reflection and scattering in the atmosphere. This occurs with cloud droplets and aerosols. For reflection, the radiation bounces off at the same angle and with the same intensity that it intersects the particle or the cloud drop with. When radiation is scattered, it produces a large number of weaker rays. An important fact is that more of the energy is scattered forward than backwards. When something is scattered backwards, it is actually called backscatter. Energy can be reflected from the surface. Energy is returned to space by reflection and emission from the Earth. We call the amount of radiation reflected back to space by the surface and clouds the albedo of the Earth. It is reported as a percent of the total amount of radiation received by the surface. This value is 30%. About 30% of the incident radiation is reflected, 5% from land and ocean, and about 25% from clouds and ice and particles in the atmosphere. White surfaces reflect more radiation than dark surfaces. Thus, clouds are an important part of the radiation balance of the Earth because they are white and are very reflective and contribute to a large part of that 30% of our Earth's albedo. Clouds are good absorbers of infrared radiation emitted from the Earth as well. Thick cloud cover absorbs most outgoing infrared radiation. These clouds then re-radiate the infrared radiation back to the surface. This is why we have warmer temperatures on nights when the sky is overcast and covered with clouds. However, all clouds interact differently with radiation, so the effect of heating really depends on the type of cloud and at what altitude in the atmosphere it is located. During the day, high thin clouds like cirrus transmit incoming shortwave radiation to the surface, but they absorb some of the outgoing longwave radiation and re-emit it back to the surface. These high clouds, thus, tend to warm the surface of the Earth. During the day, while the sun is shining, low thick clouds block incoming shortwave radiation and do not let it through to the surface. They have a high albedo when viewed from space and reflect most of the energy back to space. These clouds tend to cool the surface. Whether a specific cloud will warm or cool the surface depends on the time of day, the cloud's thickness, the cloud's height above the surface, and if the cloud is made of liquid drops, ice crystals, or both. If we take into consideration all the types of clouds and altitudes, and times of day into consideration, we come to the conclusion that, on average, clouds cool the Earth. Let's take a moment to summarize what we've learned so far about heating the Earth and its atmosphere. The atmosphere is largely transparent to incoming shortwave or high energy radiation. The atmosphere is more absorptive of the longwave or lower energy radiation emitted by the Earth. The atmosphere is heated from the ground up and explains why temperature decreases with height in the troposphere. We also know that clouds play an important role in both heating and cooling the atmosphere. Before we talk about our next topic, I'd like to give you the first extra credit fact that will appear on the midterm. The highest temperature ever recorded in Antarctica is 59 degrees Fahrenheit. This occurred on January 5th, 1974. Remember to jot this down so you can memorize it for the midterm. Up next is the energy balance and the seasons. We know that the Earth's average temperature remains fairly constant. There is a balance of incoming and outgoing radiation. If these weren't the case, we would either keep getting warmer or keep getting colder. The seasons we experience, though not to full effect here in Hawaii, are regulated by the amount of solar energy received by the surface. There are many diagrams showing what's known as the Earth's energy budget, identifying all the ways solar radiation and energy in the atmosphere interacts with the surface and other atmospheric constituents like clouds and particles. These diagrams are great because they summarize all the processes and mechanisms and components in the system, including energy absorbed by the atmosphere, reflection and scattering, and methods of moving energy around like convection and latent heat release. While these diagrams are useful, memorizing the numbers or values isn't important for the class. Having an idea about what comes in and goes out is what's important. We can also think about how energy moves in the atmosphere and where on Earth there is more or less energy reaching the surface. We know that the tropics are warm and that the polar regions are cold. We can ask, why don't the tropics keep getting hotter and the poles keep getting colder? The atmosphere and the oceans are fluids and move, transferring energy from the equator towards the poles. The energy imbalance between the warm equatorial tropics and the cold polar regions is what drives the heat flow in the atmosphere. It is also responsible for driving ocean currents and the winds. We can see a great example of this if we look at a global map of the net surface solar radiation. If we take a look at this type of map, we can see that the equatorial regions receive the bulk of the solar energy and the poles receive the least. We can also see that there is a band around the equator where slightly less energy is received by the surface. What causes this? The answer is clouds. There is a band of clouds along the equator that reflect energy back to space, making the surface temperature lower in those regions. Remember that the unequal heating of the Earth's surface is responsible for winds and ocean currents, and thus weather as we know it. There's much more energy available from the sun than the Earth can actually intercept. In fact, we only intercept a very tiny percentage of the energy given off by the sun, but it's enough to drive our weather system and seasons. Since our relationship with the sun determines how much energy we receive, even if it's a tiny amount, we need to address the two principal motions of the Earth relative to the sun, rotation and revolution. the Earth rotates around its own axis and results in us experiencing day and night. Only half of the Earth can face the sun at one time. The rotation allows us to vary day and night over a 24-hour period. The Earth's revolution around the sun is how we travel around the sun over the course of 365 and change days. That extra little bit results in a leap year every 4 years. We travel around the sun at about 113,000 kilometers per hour, or 70,000 miles per hour. Our orbit around the sun isn't perfectly circular. It's actually slightly oval-shaped. We call this shape elliptical. Our elliptical orbit can be described by how different from circular it is. In our case, we're very close to circular, and our eccentricity, a term used to describe how circular the orbit is 0.8. If our orbit was a perfect circle, we'd have an eccentricity of 1. In January, the Earth is closest to the Sun at a distance of 147.3 million kilometers. This position is called perihelion. In July, the Earth is farthest from the Sun at 152.1 million kilometers. This position is called aphelion. You may be thinking that I'm incorrect. Wouldn't we be closest to the Sun when it's summer and warmer? That's a great question. The fact is, the variations in the distance between the Sun and the Earth do not cause the seasonal changes in temperature. The seasons are primarily caused by a change in the length of day and the gradual change in the angle of sun at noon. These two facts affect the amount of energy received at the Earth's surface. Remember, when the sun is straight overhead, the energy received at the surface is the strongest. When the sun's angle is lower, the sun is less intense because the path through the atmosphere becomes longer and more of the radiation is absorbed, scattered, and reflected by the atmosphere. Half of the Earth experiences sunlight at a time. This is called the circle of illumination. Throughout the year, the number of hours each location spends in the illuminated portion changes. This is based on latitude. Locations at the equator receive 12 hours of day and 12 hours of night all year long. The closer to the poles you travel, the more time you spend in darkness during the winter season for a specific hemisphere. For Oahu, at a latitude of approximately 20, our longest day, called the summer solstice, and our shortest day, the winter solstice, have very similar number of hours in the sun, 13 hours and 12 minutes for our longest day, and 10 hours and 48 minutes for our shortest day. If you live in a location closer to the pole, say at 40 degrees north, you would experience 14 hours and 52 minutes on the summer solstice of sunlight, and only 9 hours and 8 minutes of sunlight on the winter solstice. The times described are the number of hours of daylight. You can imagine that the more time you spend in the sun, the warmer a location will be. At the poles, approximately 6 months are in light and 6 months are in darkness. A quick summary before moving on. The most important reasons for variations in the amount of solar energy include seasonal changes in the angle at which the sun's rays strike the surface and changes in the length of daylight. You may be asking, why does the length of day and sun angle change? The answer is that the Earth's orientation to the sun constantly changes as it revolves around the sun in its elliptical orbit. The Earth rotates on its axis as it travels around the sun. We draw this axis as an imaginary line through the pole. The inclination of the axis, or the tilt, is 23.5 degrees from the perpendicular. We call the plane of the orbit around the sun in which we travel the plane of the ecliptic. That means that the Earth doesn't wobble up and down in its orbit. Without the tilt, we would not have seasons. We note four special places in our orbit with names and often festivals. First, we have the solstices, which I already mentioned by name above. The summer solstice is the longest day of the year in the northern hemisphere. The sun's rays reach their northernmost limit at 23.5 north latitude. This location is called the Tropic of Cancer. This occurs on June 21st or 22nd every year and is considered the first day of summer in the northern hemisphere. Note that the northern hemisphere is tilted towards the sun in this case. The winter solstice is essentially the opposite of the summer solstice. It's when the sun's vertical rays reach their southernmost limit at 23.5 south latitude at the Tropic of Capricorn. Now remember, this is when the sun is vertically overhead. This occurs on December 21st or 22nd and is the first day of northern hemisphere winter. It is also the shortest day of the year in the northern hemisphere and occurs when the northern hemisphere is tilted away from the sun. We also have equinoxes. These occur when incoming solar radiation is equal in both hemispheres. They occur midway between the solstices. Vertical rays from the sun strike along the equator at 0 degrees latitude. The Earth is not tilted towards or away from the sun. The autumnal equinox occurs on September 22nd or 23rd, and we experience 12 hours of day and 12 hours of night. The spring equinox occurs on March 21st or 22nd, and is also called the vernal equinox. On this day, we experience 12 hours of day and 12 hours of night as well. Let's quickly review our summer solstice information. The summer solstice occurs on June 21st or 22nd. Vertical rays from the sun strike the Tropic of Cancer at 23.5 north latitude. The northern hemisphere experiences their longest day, and the southern hemisphere experiences its shortest day. The northern hemisphere experiences their highest sun angle, and the southern hemisphere locations experience their lowest sun angle. In the northern hemisphere, the farther you are from the equator towards the North Pole, the longer the period of daylight. For example, at the Arctic Circle, they experience 24 hours of sunlight. For the Antarctic, they experience 24 hours of darkness. Many cultures place importance of the solstices and mark them with celebrations. Now let's review the winter solstice information. It occurs on December 21st or 22nd. Vertical rays from the sun strike the Tropic of Capricorn at 23.5 south latitude. The southern hemisphere experiences their longest day, while the northern hemisphere experiences their shortest day. The southern hemisphere experiences their highest sun angle, while the northern hemisphere experiences their lowest sun angle. In the southern hemisphere, the farther from the equator towards the South Pole, the longer the period of daylight. In this case, the Antarctic has 24 hours of daylight, while in the northern hemisphere, in the Arctic, the region experiences 24 hours of darkness. To demonstrate the importance of tilt on the seasons and what would happen if it changed, I'd like to give you some examples. If the Earth had a greater tilt, greater than 23.5 degrees, we'd have more extreme seasons with colder winters and warmer summers. If we had less tilt, or a tilt less than 23.5 degrees, we'd have milder seasons with warmer winters and cooler summers. Remember, if our tilt was zero, we would have no seasons. For both cases, if we change the tilt, we actually change the location of the Tropic of Cancer, Tropic of Capricorn, and the Arctic and Antarctic circles. For example, if the tilt were 30 degrees, the Tropic of Cancer would be located at 30 degrees north, and the Tropic of Capricorn would be located at 30 degrees south. If the tilt were 20 degrees, the Tropic of Cancer would be located at 20 degrees north, and the Tropic of Capricorn would be located at 20 degrees south. For the Antarctic and Arctic circles, we can do the same thing. The current location is 66.5 north and 66.5 degrees south. For the Antarctic and Arctic circles, we can do the same thing. The current location is 66.5 degrees north and 66.5 degrees south. We calculate this value by taking 90 and subtracting the tilt, 23.5. We can then calculate how the Antarctic and Arctic circles would change as the tilt changed. For a tilt of 30 degrees, the Antarctic circle would be at 60 degrees south and the Arctic circle would be at 60 degrees north, 90 minus 30. If the tilt were 20 degrees, the Antarctic circle would be 70 degrees south and the Arctic circle would be 70 degrees north. That finishes up our lecture on how energy interacts with the atmosphere and the surface of the Earth, and what determines the seasons and what special days we identify called equinoxes and solstices. Thanks for listening, and I hope you join us again for our next podcast. Goodbye!